If you're like 98% of my clients, your initial gathering activity will collect much more than can be comfortably stacked in an in-basket. If that's the case, just create stacks around the in-basket and maybe even on the floor underneath it. Ultimately, you'll be emptying the in-stacks as you process and organize everything. In the meantime, though, make sure there's some obvious visual distinction between the stacks that are in and everything else. Instant dumping. If it's immediately evident that something is trash, go ahead and toss it when you see it. For some of my clients, this marks the first time they've ever cleaned their center desk drawer. If you're not sure what something is or whether it's worth keeping, go ahead and put it into in. You'll be able to decide about it later when you process the in basket. What you don't want to do is to let yourself get wrapped up in things piece by piece, trying to decide this or that. You'll do that later anyway if it's in, and it's easier to make those kinds of choices when you're in the processing mode. The objective for the collection process is to get everything into in as quickly as possible so you've appropriately retrenched and drawn the battle lines. Be careful of the purge and organize bug. Many people get hit with the purge and organize virus as they're going through various areas of their office and their home. If that happens to you, it's okay so long as you have a major open window of time to get through the whole process, like at least a whole week ahead of you. Otherwise, you'll need to break it up into chunks and capture them as little projects or actions to do, with reminders in your system, like purge four-drawer cabinet or clean office closet. What you don't want to do is let yourself get caught running down a rabbit trail cleaning up some piece of your work and then not be able to get through the whole action management implementation process. It may take longer than you think, and you want to go for the gold and finish processing all your stuff and setting up your system as soon as possible. What about things that are already on lists and in organizers? You may already have some lists and some sort of organization system in place, but unless you're thoroughly familiar with this workflow processing model and have implemented it previously, I recommend that you treat those lists as items still to be processed, like everything else in. You'll want your system to be consistent, and it'll be necessary to evaluate everything from the same viewpoint to get it that way. But I can't lose that thing. Often in the collection process, someone will run across a piece of paper or a document that causes her to say, "Oh my God, I forgot about that. I've got to deal with that." It could be a phone slip with a return call she was supposed to handle 2 days before, or some meeting notes that remind her of an action she was supposed to take weeks ago. She doesn't want to put whatever it is into the huge stack of other stuff in her in basket because she's afraid she might lose track of it again. If that happens to you, first ask yourself if it's something that really has to be handled before you get through this initial implementation time. If so, best deal with it immediately so you get it off your mind. If not, go ahead and put it into in. You're going to get all that processed and emptied soon anyway, so it won't be lost. If you can't deal with the action in the moment and you still just have to have the reminder right in front of you, go ahead and create an emergency stack somewhere close at hand. It's not an ideal solution, but it'll do. Keep in mind that some potential anxiousness is going to surface as you make your stuff more conscious to you than it's been. Create whatever supports you need. Start with your desktop. Ready now? Okay. Start piling those things on your desk into in. Often there'll be numerous things right at hand that need to go in there. Many people use their whole desktop as in. If you're one of them, you'll have several stacks around you to begin your in collection with. Start at one end of your workspace and move around, dealing with everything in every cubic inch. Typical items will be stacks of mail and memos, phone slips, collected business cards, notes from meetings. Resist the urge to say, as almost everyone does initially, "Well, I know what's in that stack, and that's where I want to leave it." That's exactly what hasn't worked before, and it all needs to go into the in basket. As you go around your desktop, ask yourself if you have any intention of changing any of the tools or equipment there. Is your phone okay? Your computer? The desk itself? If anything needs changing, write a note about it and toss it into in. Desk drawers. Next, tackle the desk drawers if you have them, one at a time. Any attention on anything in there? Any actionable items? Is there anything that doesn't belong there? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, put the actionable item into N or write a note about it. Again, whether you use this opportunity to clean and organize the drawers or simply make a note to do it later will depend on how much time you have and how much stuff is in there. Countertops. Continue working your way around your office, collecting everything sitting on the tops of credenzas or counters or cabinets that doesn't belong there permanently. Often there will be stacks of reading material, mail, and miscellaneous folders and support material for actions and projects. Collect it all. Maybe there is reference material that you've already used and just left out. If that's so, and if you can return it to the file cabinet or the bookshelf in just a second, go ahead and do that. Be careful to check with yourself, though, about whether there is some potential action tied to the material before you put it away. If there is, put it into N so you can deal with it later in the process. Inside the cabinets. Now look inside the cabinets. What's in there? These are perfect areas for stashing large supplies and reference materials and equally seductive for holding deeper levels of stuff. Any broken or out-of-date things in there? Often I'll find collectibles and nostalgia that aren't meaningful to my clients any longer. One general manager of an insurance office, for example, wound up tossing out at least a small dumpster's worth of recognition awards he had accumulated over the years. Again, if some of these areas are out of control and need purging and organizing, write that on a note and toss it into N. Floors, walls, and shelves. Anything on bulletin boards that needs action? Anything tacked onto the walls that doesn't belong there? Any attention on your pictures, artwork, plaques, or decorations? How about the open shelves? Any books that need to be read or donated? Any catalogs, manuals, or three-ring binders that are out of date or have some potential action associated with them? Any piles or stacks of things on the floor? Just scoot them over next to your in-basket to add to your inventory. Equipment, furniture, and fixtures. Is there anything you want to do or change about any of your office equipment or furniture or the physical space itself? Does everything work? Do you have all the lighting you need? If there are actionable items, you know what to do. Make a note and put it in N. Other locations. Depending on the scope of what you're addressing in this process, you may want to do some version of the same kind of gathering anywhere else you keep stuff. If you're determined to get to a really empty head, it's imperative that you do it everywhere. Some executives I work with find it immensely valuable to take me home with them and have me walk them through this process there as well. Often they've allowed the not-so-important trap to ensnare them in their home life, and it has gnawed away at their energy. Mental gathering, the mind sweep. Once you feel you've collected all the physical things in your environment that need processing, you'll want to collect everything else that may be residing in your psychic RAM. What has your attention that isn't represented by something already in your in-basket? This is where the stack of plain paper really comes into play. I recommend that you write out each thought, each idea, each project, or thing that has your attention on a separate sheet of paper. You could make one long list on a pad, but given how you will later be processing each item individually, it's actually more effective to put everything on separate sheets. You will likely not keep those pieces of paper unless you decide that low-tech is your best organizing method. But it'll be handy to have them as discrete items to deal with as you're processing. It will probably take you between 20 minutes and an hour to clear your head onto separate notes after you've gathered everything else. You'll find that things will tend to occur to you in somewhat random fashion. Little things, big things, personal things, professional things, in no particular order. In this instance, go for quantity. It's much better to overdo this process than to risk missing something. You can always toss the junk later. Your first idea may be save the ozone layer, and then you'll think, I need cat food. Grab them all. Don't be surprised if you discover you've created quite a stack of paper in N during this procedure. Trigger list. To assist in clearing your head, you may want to review the incompletion triggers list in the PDF included with this program. Review the list item by item to see if you've forgotten anything. Often you'll just need a jog to unearth something lurking in a corner of your mind. Remember, when something occurs to you, write it on a piece of paper and toss it into N. the in inventory. If your head is empty of everything, personally and professionally, then your in basket is probably quite full and likely spilling over. In addition to the paper-based and physical items in your in basket, your inventory of in should include any resident voicemails and all the emails that are currently staged in the in area of your communication software. It should also include any items on your organizer list for which you have not yet determined next actions. I usually recommend that clients download their voicemails onto paper notes and put those into their in baskets, along with their whole organizer notebooks, which usually need significant reassessment. If you've been using something like a Palm PDA or Microsoft Outlook or Lotus Organizer for anything other than calendar and telephone address functionality, I suggest you print out any task and to-do lists and put them, too, into your in-basket. Emails are best left where they are because of their volume and the efficiency factor of dealing with them within their own mini-system. But in doesn't stay in. When you've done all that, you're ready to take the next step. You don't want to leave anything in for an indefinite period of time, because then it would without fail creep back into your psyche again, since your mind would know you weren't dealing with it. Of course, one of the main factors in people's resistance to collecting stuff into in is the lack of a good processing and organizing methodology to handle it. That brings us to the next chapter, getting in to empty. Chapter 6, Processing, Getting In to Empty. Assuming that you have collected everything that has your attention, your job now is to actually get to the bottom of in. Getting in to empty doesn't mean actually doing all the actions and projects that you've collected. It just means identifying each item and deciding what it is, what it means, and what you're going to do with it. When you've finished processing in, you will have 1. Trashed what you don't need, 2. Completed any less than 2-minute actions, 3. Handed off to others anything that can be delegated, 4. Sorted into your own organizing system reminders of actions that require more than 2 minutes, and 5. Identified any larger commitments or projects you now have based on the input. To get an overview of this process, you may find it useful here to refer to the workflow diagram within the included PDF file. The center column illustrates all the steps involved in processing and deciding your next actions. This chapter focuses on the components in the diagram center column, the steps from in to next action. You'll immediately see the natural organization that results from following this process for each of your open loops. For instance, if you pick up something from in and realize, I've got to call Andrea about that, but I've got to do it on Monday when she's in her office, then you'll defer that action immediately and enter it into your calendar for Monday. I recommend that you go through this chapter and the next one on organizing your actions before you actually start processing what you've collected in. It may save you some steps. When I coach clients through this process, it invariably becomes a dance back and forth between the simple decision-making stage of processing the open loops and the trickier task of figuring out the best way to enter these decisions in a client's particular organization system. Many of my coaching clients, for example, are eager to get set up personally on a PDA organizer that will synchronize with Microsoft Outlook, which their company is using for email and scheduling. The first thing we have to do, after we've collected the in-basket, is make sure all their hardware and software are working. Then we clean up, print out and erase usually, everything they have previously tried to organize in their Outlook task lists and put it all into in. Then we establish some working categories such as calls, errands, agendas, at computer, and so on. As we begin to process the in basket, the client can go immediately to his computer and type his action steps directly into the system he will ultimately depend on. If you're not sure yet what you're going to be using as a personal reminder system, don't worry. You can begin very appropriately with the low-tech initial process of notes on pieces of paper. You can always upgrade your tools later once you have your system in place. Processing guidelines. The best way to learn this model is by doing, but there are a few basic rules to follow. Process the top item first, process one item at a time, and never put anything back into in. Top item first. Even if the second item down is a personal note to you from the president of your country, and the top item is a piece of junk mail, you've got to process the junk mail first. That's an exaggeration to make a point, but the principle is an important one. Everything gets processed equally. The verb process does not mean spend time on. It just means decide what the thing is and what action is required and then dispatch it accordingly. You're going to get to the bottom of the basket as soon as you can anyway, and you don't want to avoid dealing with anything in there. Emergency scanning is not processing. Most people get to their in-basket or their email and look for the most urgent, most fun, or most interesting stuff to deal with first. Emergency scanning is fine and necessary sometimes. I do it too. Maybe you've just come back from an off-site meeting and have to be on a long conference call in 15 minutes. So you check to make sure there are no landmines about to explode and to see if your client has emailed you back okaying the big proposal. But that's not processing your in-basket. It's emergency scanning. When you're in processing mode, you must get into the habit of starting at one end and just cranking through items one at a time in order. As soon as you break that rule and process only what you feel like processing and in whatever order, you'll invariably begin to leave things unprocessed. Then you will no longer have a functioning funnel, and it will back up all over your desk and office. LIFO or FIFO. Theoretically, you should flip your in-basket upside down and process first the first thing that came in. As long as you go from one end clear through to the other within a reasonable period of time, though, it won't make much difference. You're going to see it all in short order anyway. And if you're going to attempt to clear up a big backlog of emails staged in, you'll actually discover it's more efficient to process the last in first because of all the discussion threads that accumulate on top of one another. One item at a time. You may find you have a tendency, while processing your in-basket, to pick something up, not know exactly what you want to do about it, and then let your eyes wander onto another item farther down the stack and get engaged with it. That item may be more attractive to your psyche because you know right away what to do with it, and you don't feel like thinking about what's in your hand. This is dangerous territory. What's in your hand is likely to land on a humph stack on the side of your desk, because you become distracted by something easier, more important, or more interesting below it. Most people also want to take a whole stack of things out of the in-basket at once and put it in front of them and try to crank through it. Although I empathize with the desire to deal with a big chunk, I constantly remind clients to put back everything but the one item on top. The focus on just one thing forces the requisite attention and decision-making to get through all your stuff. And if you get interrupted, which is likely, you won't have umpteen parts of in scattered around outside the tray and out of control again. The multitasking exception. There's a subtle exception to the one item at a time rule. Some personality types really need to shift their focus away from something for at least a minute in order to make a decision about it. When I see this going on with someone, I let him take two or sometimes three things out at once as he's processing. It's then easier and faster for him to make a choice about the action required. Remember, multitasking is an exception, and it works only if you hold to the discipline of working through every item in short order and never avoid any decision for longer than a minute or two. Nothing goes back into in. There's a one-way path out of in. This is actually what was meant by the old admonition to handle things once. Though handling things just once is in fact a bad idea. If you did that, you'd never have a list because you'd finish everything as soon as you saw it. You'd also be highly ineffective and inefficient since most things you deal with are not to be acted upon the first time you become aware of them. Where the advice does hold is in eliminating the bad habit of continually picking things up out of in, not deciding what they mean or what you're going to do about them, and then just leaving them there. A better admonition would be, the first time you pick something up from your in-basket, decide what to do about it and where it goes. Never put it back in. The key processing question. What's the next action? You've got the message. You're going to deal with one item at a time, and you're going to make a firm next action decision about each one. This may sound easy, and it is, but it requires you to do some fast, hard thinking. Much of the time, the action will not be self-evident. It will need to be determined. On that first item, for example, do you need to call someone, fill something out, get information from the web, buy something at the store, talk to your secretary, email your boss, what? If there's an action, its specific nature will determine the next set of options. But what if you say, there's really nothing to do with this? What if there is no action? It's likely that a portion of your in-basket will require no action. There will be three types of things in this category: trash, items to incubate, and reference material. Trash. If you've been following my suggestions, you'll no doubt already have tossed out a big pile of stuff. It's also likely that you will have put stacks of material into in that include things you don't need anymore. So don't be surprised if there's still a lot more to throw away as you process your stuff. Processing all the things in your world will make you more conscious of what you're going to do and what you should not be doing. One director of a foundation I worked with discovered that he'd allowed way too many emails, thousands, to accumulate, emails that in fact he wasn't ever going to respond to anyway. He told me that using my method forced him to go on a healthy diet about what he would allow to hang around his world as an incompletion. It's likely that at some point you'll come up against the question of whether or not to keep something for future reference. I have two ways of dealing with that. When in doubt, throw it out. And when in doubt, keep it. Take your pick. I think either approach is fine. You just need to trust your intuition and be realistic about your space. Most people have some angst about all of this because their systems have never really been totally functional and clear-edged before. If you make a clean distinction between what's reference and supplies and what requires action, and if your reference system is simple and workable, you can easily keep as much material as you can accommodate. Since no action is required on it, it's just a matter of physical space and logistics. Filing experts can offer you more detailed guidelines about all this, and your CPA can provide record retention timetables that will tell you how long you should keep what kinds of documentation. My suggestion is that you make the distinction about whether something is actionable or not. Once it's clear that no action is needed, there's room for lots of options. Incubate. There will probably be things in your in-basket about which you will say to yourself, there's nothing to do on this now, but there might be later. Examples of this would be a flyer announcing a Chamber of Commerce breakfast with a guest speaker you might want to hear, but it's 2 weeks away, and you're not sure yet if you'll be at home then or out of town on a business trip. An agenda for a board meeting you've been invited to attend in 3 weeks. No action is required on it, other than you're briefing yourself a day ahead of the meeting by reading the agenda. An advertisement for the next Quicken software upgrade for your personal finances. Do you really need this next version? You don't know. You'd rather sleep on it for another week. An idea you had about something you might want to do for next year's annual sales meeting. There's nothing to do on this now, but you'd like to be reminded when the time comes to start planning for it. A note to yourself about taking a watercolor class, which you have zero time for right now. What do you do with these kinds of things? There are two options that could work. First, write them on a someday maybe list. Secondly, put them on your calendar or in a tickler file. The point of all these incubation procedures is that they give you a way to get the items off your mind right now and let you feel confident that some reminder of the possible action will resurface at an appropriate time. I'll elaborate on these in more detail in the next chapter on organizing. For now, just put a post-it on such items and label them maybe or remind on October 17th and set them aside in a pending category you'll be accumulating for later sorting. Reference. Many of the things you will uncover in will need no action but may have value as potentially useful information about projects and topics. Ideally, you've already set up a workable filing system, as described in Chapter 4, for your reference and support information. As you come across material in your in-basket and email that you'd like to keep for archival or support purposes, file it. You'll probably discover that there are lots of miscellaneous kinds of things that you want to keep but have piled up in stacks or stuffed into drawers because your reference system was too formal or just plain non-existent. Let me remind you here that a less than 60-second, fun-to-use, general reference filing system within arm's reach of where you sit is a mission-critical component of full implementation of this methodology. In the battle zone of real life, If it's not easy, fast, and fun to file, you'll stack instead of organizing. And then it will become much more difficult to keep things processed. Whenever you come across something you want to keep, make a label for it, put it in a file folder, and tuck that into your filing drawer. Or put a post-it on it, instructing your secretary or assistant to do the same. In my early days of coaching, I used to give my clients permission to keep a to-file pile. No longer. I discovered that if you can't get it into your system immediately, you're probably not ever going to. If you won't do it now, you likely won't do it later either. And if there is an action, what is it? This is the biggie. If there's something that needs to be done about an item in N, then you need to decide what exactly that next action is. Next actions, again, means the next physical visible activity that would be required to move the situation toward closure. This is both easier and more difficult than it sounds. The next action should be easy to figure out, but there are often some quick analyses and several planning steps that haven't occurred yet in your mind, and these have to happen before you can determine precisely what has to happen to complete the item, even if it's a fairly simple one. Let's look at a sample list of the things that a person might typically have his attention on. Clean the garage, do my taxes, conference I'm going to, Bobby's birthday, press release, performance reviews, management changes. Although each of these items may seem relatively clear as a task or project, determining the next action on each one will take some thought. Clean the garage. Well, I just have to get in there and start. No, wait a minute, there's a big refrigerator in there that I need to get rid of first. I should find out if John Patrick wants it for his camp. I should call John regarding the refrigerator in garage. What about do my taxes? But I can't actually start on them till I have my last K-1 back. Can't do anything until then, so I'm waiting for K-1 from Acme Trust. And for the conference I'm going to, I need to find out whether Sandra is going to prepare a press kit for us. I guess I need to email Sandra regarding press kit for the conference. And so forth. The action steps, call John, waiting for K-1, email Sandra, are what need to be decided about everything that is actionable in your in-basket. The action step needs to be the absolute next physical thing to do. Remember that these are physical, visible activities. Many people think they've determined the next action when they get down to set meeting. But that's not the next action because it's not descriptive of physical behavior. How do you set a meeting? Well, it could be with a phone call or an email, but to whom? Decide. If you don't decide now, you'll still have to decide at some other point, and what this process is designed to do is actually get you to finish the thinking exercise about this item. If you haven't identified the next physical action required to kickstart it, there will be a psychological gap every time you think about it, even vaguely. You'll tend to resist noticing it. When you get to a phone or to your computer, you want to have all your thinking completed so you can use the tools you have and the location you're in to more easily get things done, having already defined what there is to do. What if you say to yourself, well, the next thing I need to do is decide what to do about this? That's a tricky one. Deciding isn't really an action because actions take time and deciding doesn't. There's always some physical activity that can be done to facilitate your decision-making. 99% of the time, you just need more information before you can make a decision. That additional information can come from external sources. Call Susan to get her input on the proposal. Or from internal thinking. Draft ideas about the new reorganization. Either way, there's still a next action to be determined in order to move the project forward. Once you decide what the action step is, you have three options once you decide what the next action really is. Do it, if the action takes less than 2 minutes. Delegate it, if you're not the most appropriate person to do the action. Or defer it into your organization system as an option for work to do later. Do it. If the next action can be done in 2 minutes or less, do it when you first pick the item up. If the memo requires just a 30-second reading and then a quick yes, no, other response on a post-it back to the sender, do it now. If you can browse the catalog in just a minute or two to see if there might be anything of interest in it, browse away and then toss it, root it, or reference it as required. If the next action on something is to leave a quick message on someone's voicemail, make the call now. Even if the item is not a high priority one, do it now if you're ever going to do it at all. The rationale for the two-minute rule is that that's more or less the point where it starts taking longer to store and track an item than to deal with it the first time it's in your hands. In other words, it's the efficiency cutoff. If the thing's not important enough to be done, throw it away. If it is, and if you're going to do it sometime, the efficiency factor should come into play. Many people find that getting into the habit of following the two-minute rule creates a dramatic improvement in their productivity. One vice president of a large software company told me that it gave him an additional hour a day of quality discretionary time. He was one of those 300 emails a day high-tech executives, highly focused for most of the workday on three key initiatives. Many of those emails were from people who reported to him, and they needed his eyes on something, his comments and okays, in order to move forward. But because they were not on a topic in his rifle sights, he would just stage the emails in to get to later. After several thousand of them piled up, he would have to go into work and spend whole weekends trying to catch up. That would have been okay if he were 26, when everything's an adrenaline rush anyway, but he was in his 30s and had young kids. Working all weekend was no longer acceptable behavior. When I coached him, we went through all 800-plus emails he currently had in. It turned out that a lot could be dumped, quite a few needed to be filed as reference, and many others required less than two-minute replies that he whipped through. I checked with him a year later, and he was still current. He never let his emails mount up beyond a screenful anymore. He said it had changed the nature of his division because of the dramatic decrease in his own response time. His staff thought he was now made of Teflon. That's a rather dramatic testimonial, but it's an indication of just how critical some of these simple processing behaviors can be, especially as the volume and speed of the input increase for you personally. 2 minutes is in fact just a guideline. If you have a long open window of time in which to process your in-basket, you can extend the cutoff for each item to 5 or 10 minutes. If you've got to get to the bottom of all your input rapidly in order to figure out how to best use your afternoon, then you may want to shorten the time to 1 minute or even 30 seconds so you can get through everything a little faster. It's not a bad idea to time yourself for a few of these while you're becoming familiar with the process. Most clients I work with have difficulty estimating how long 2 minutes actually is, and they greatly underestimate how long certain actions are likely to take. For instance, if your action is to leave someone a message and you get the real person instead of his or her voicemail, the call will usually take quite a bit longer than 2 minutes. There's nothing you really need to track about your two-minute actions. You just do them. If, however, you take an action and don't finish the project with that one action, you'll need to clarify what's next on it and manage that according to the same criteria. For instance, if you act to replace the cartridge in your favorite pen and discover that you're out of cartridge refills, you'll want to decide on the next action about getting them, buy refills at the store, and do, delegate, or defer it appropriately. Adhere to the two-minute rule and see how much you get done in the process of clearing out your in stacks. Many people are amazed by how many two-minute actions are possible, often on some of their most critical current projects. Let me make one more observation regarding the two-minute rule, this time as it relates to your comfort with typing emails. If you're in a large volume email environment, you'll greatly improve your productivity by increasing your typing speed and using the shortcut keyboard commands for your operating system and your common email software. Too many sophisticated professionals are seriously hamstrung because they still hunt and peck and try to use their mouse too much. More work could be dispatched faster by combining the two-minute rule with improved computer skills. I found that many executives aren't resisting technology, they're just resisting their keyboards. Delegate it. If the next action is going to take longer than 2 minutes, ask yourself, am I the best person to be doing it? If not, hand it off to the appropriate party in a systematic format. Delegation is not always downstream. You may decide, this has got to go over to customer service, or my boss needs to put his eyes on this next, or I need my partner's point of view on this. A systematic format could be any of the following. send the appropriate party an email, write a note or an overnote on paper and route the item out to that person, leave him or her a voicemail, add it as an agenda item on a list for your next real-time conversation with that person, or talk to him or her directly, either face-to-face or by phone. Although any of these options can work, I would recommend them in the above order, top to bottom. Email is usually the fastest mode into the system. It provides an electronic record, and the receiver gets to deal with it at his or her convenience. Written notes are next because they too can get into the system immediately, and the recipient then has a physical particle to use as an organizational reminder. If you're passing on paper-based material as part of the handoff, a written communication is obviously the way to go. As with email, the person you hand it off to can then deal with it on his or her own schedule. Voicemail can be efficient, and many professionals live by it. The downside is that tracking becomes an additional requirement for both you and the recipient, and what you say is not always what gets heard. Next would be saving the communication on an agenda list or in a folder for your next regular meeting with the person. Sometimes this is necessary because of the sensitive or detailed nature of the topic, but it then must wait to get moving until that meeting occurs. The least preferable option would be to interrupt what both you and the person are doing to talk about the item. This is immediate, but it hampers workflow for both of you and has the same downside as voicemail: no written record. Tracking the handoff. If you do delegate an action to someone else, and if you care at all whether something happens as a result, you'll need to track it. As I will walk you through in the next chapter about organizing, you'll see that a significant category to manage is waiting for. As you develop your own customized system, what you eventually hand off and then track could look like a list in a planner, a file folder holding separate papers for each item, and/or a list categorized as waiting for in your software. For now, if you don't have a trusted system set up already, just put a note on a piece of paper: WF, standing for waiting for, reply from Bob, and put that into a pending stack of notes in a separate pile or tray that may result from your processing. What if the ball is already in someone else's court? In the example cited above about waiting for the last K-1 to come in so you can do your taxes, the next action is currently on someone else's plate. In such situations, you will also want to track the action as a delegated item or as a waiting for. On the paper that says, "Do my taxes," write something like, "Waiting for K-1 from Acme Trust," and put that into your pending stack. It's important that you record the date on everything you hand off to others. This, of all the categories in your personal system, is the most crucial one to keep tabs on. The few times you will actually want to refer to that information, "But I called and ordered that on March 12th, will make it worth establishing this as a lifelong habit. Defer it. It's likely that most of the next actions you determine for things in N will be yours to do and will take longer than 2 minutes to complete. A call you need to make to a customer, an email you need to spend a little time thinking about and drafting to your team, a gift you need to buy for your brother at the stationery store, a piece of software you need to download from the web and try out, a conversation you must have with your spouse about an investment you think you should make. All of these fit that description. These actions will have to be written down somewhere and then organized in the appropriate categories so you can access them when you need to. For the moment, go ahead and put post-its on the pieces of paper in N with the action written on them, and add these to the pending stack of papers that have been processed. The pending things that are left. If you follow the instructions in this chapter, you'll dump a mess of things, file a bunch, do a lot of 2-minute actions, and hand off a number of items to other people. You'll also wind up with a stack of items that have actions associated with them that you still need to do, soon, someday, or on a specific date, and reminders of things you're waiting on from other people. This pending group is made up of the actions you've delegated or deferred. It is what still needs to be organized in some fashion in your personal system, a topic I'll cover in step-by-step detail in the next chapter. Identifying the projects you have. This last step in getting to the bottom of N requires a shift in perspective from the single action details to the larger picture, your projects. Again, I define a project as any outcome you're committed to achieving that will take more than one action step to complete. If you look through an inventory of actions that you have already been generating, call Frank about the car alarm, email Bernadette Ray conference materials, you'll no doubt recognize a number of things that are larger than the single action you've defined. There's still going to be something about car alarm to do after the call to Frank, and there will still be something to handle about the conference after the email to Bernadette. I hope you're able to see the very practical reason for defining projects as broadly as I do. If the action step you've identified will not complete the commitment, then you'll need some stake in the ground to keep reminding you of actions you have pending until you have closure. You need to make a list of projects. A projects list may include anything from give holiday party to divest the widget product line to finalize compensation package. The purpose of this list is not to reflect your priorities, but just to ensure that you've got placeholders for all those open loops. Whether you draw up your projects list while you're initially processing your in-basket or after you've set up your action lists doesn't really matter. It just needs to be done at some point, and it must be maintained, as it's the key driver for reviewing where you are and where you want to be. For now, let's make sure your organizing setup is all systems go. Chapter 7. Organizing. Setting up the right buckets. Having a total and seamless system of organization in place gives you tremendous power because it allows your mind to let go of lower-level thinking and graduate to intuitive focusing, undistracted by matters that haven't been dealt with appropriately. But your physical organization system must be better than your mental one in order for that to happen. In this chapter, I'll lead you through the organizing steps and tools that will be required as you process your in-basket. As you initially process in, you'll create lists and groupings of things you want to organize, and you'll invariably think of additional items to include. In other words, your organization system is not something that you'll necessarily create all at once in a vacuum. It will evolve as you process your stuff and test out whether you have put everything in the best place for you. Take another look at the workflow diagram. The outer ring of the diagram shows the main groupings into which things will go as you decide what they are and what needs to be done about them. The basic categories. There are 7 primary types of things that you'll want to keep track of and manage from an organizational perspective. A projects list, project support material, calendared actions and information, next actions lists, a waiting for list, reference material, and a someday maybe list. The importance of hard edges. It's critical that all these categories be kept pristinely distinct from one another. They each represent a discrete type of agreement we make with ourselves, and if they lose their edges and begin to blend, much of the value of organizing will be lost. If you put reference material in the same pile as things you still want to read, for example, you'll go numb to the stack. If you put items on your next actions list that really need to go on the calendar because they have to occur on specific days, then you won't trust your calendar, and you'll continually have to reassess your action list. If you have a project that you're not going to be doing anything about for some time, it must go onto your someday maybe list so you can relate to the projects list with the rigorous action-generating focus it needs. And if something you're waiting for is included on one of your action lists, you'll continually get bogged down by non-productive rethinking. All you really need is lists and folders. Once you know what you need to keep track of, covered in the previous chapter on processing, all you really need is lists and folders for reference and support materials. Your lists, which, as I've indicated, could also be items in folders, will keep track of projects and someday maybes, as well as the actions you'll need to take on your active open loops. Folders, digital or paper-based, will be required to hold your reference material and the support information for active projects. Lots of people have been making lists for years, but have never found the procedure to be particularly effective. There's rampant skepticism about systems as simple as the one I'm recommending. But most list makers haven't put the appropriate things on their list or have left them incomplete, which has kept the lists themselves from being very functional. Once you know what goes on the lists, however, things get much easier. Then you just need a way to manage them. As I've said, you shouldn't bother to create some external structuring of the priorities on your list that then you'll have to rearrange or rewrite as things change. Attempting to impose such scaffolding has been a big source of frustration in many people's organizing. You'll be prioritizing more intuitively as you see the whole list against quite a number of shifting variables. The list is just a way for you to keep track of the total inventory of active things to which you have made a commitment and to have that inventory available for review. When I refer to a list, keep in mind that I mean nothing more than a grouping of items with some similar characteristic. A list could look like one of three things. First, a file folder with separate paper notes for the items within the category. Second, an actual list on a titled piece of paper, often within a loose leaf organizer or planner. Or third, an inventory in a software program or on a digital assistant, such as Microsoft Outlook task categories or a category on a handheld PDA. Organizing action reminders. If you've emptied your in-basket, you'll undoubtedly have created a stack of pending reminders for yourself, representing longer than 2-minute actions that cannot be delegated to someone else. You'll probably have anywhere from 20 to 60 or 70 or more such items. You'll also have accumulated reminders of things that you've handed off to other people and perhaps some things that need to be placed in your calendar or a someday maybe kind of holder. You'll want to sort all of this into groupings that make sense to you so you can review them as options for work to do when you have time. You'll also want to decide on the most appropriate way physically to organize those groups, whether as items in folders or on lists, either paper-based or digital. The actions that go on your calendar. For the purposes of organization, as I've said, there are two basic kinds of actions: those that must be done on a certain day and/or at a particular time, and those that just need to be done as soon as you can get to them around your other calendared items. Calendared action items can be either time-specific, for example, 4 to 5 o'clock, meet with Jim, or day-specific, call Rachel Tuesday to see if she got the proposal. As you were processing your in-basket, you probably came across things that you put right into your calendar as they showed up. You may have realized that the next action on getting a medical checkup, for example, was to call and make the appointment, and so, since the action required 2 minutes or less, you actually did it when it occurred to you. Writing the appointment into your calendar as you made it would then have been common sense. What many people want to do, however, based on old habits of writing daily to-do lists, is put actions on the calendar that they think they'd really like to get done next Monday, say, but that then actually might not, and that might then have to be taken over to following days. Resist this impulse. You need to trust your calendar as sacred territory, reflecting the exact hard edges of your day's commitments, which should be noticeable at a glance while you're on the run. That'll be much easier if the only things in there are those that you absolutely have to get done on that day. When the calendar is relegated to its proper role in organizing, the majority of the actions that you need to do are left in the category of as soon as possible against all the other things I have to do. Organizing as soon as possible actions by context. Over many years, I've discovered that the best way to be reminded of an as soon as I can action is by the particular context required for that action. That is, either the tool or the location or the person needed to complete it. For instance, if the action requires a computer, it should go on an at computer list. If your action demands that you be out in your car driving around, such as stopping by the bank or going to the hardware store, the errands list would be the appropriate place to track it. If the next step is to talk about something face-to-face with your partner Emily, putting it into an Emily folder or list makes the most sense. How discrete these categories will need to be will depend on, 1, how many actions you actually have to track, and 2, how often you change the context within which to do them. If you are that rare person who has only 25 next actions, a single next actions list might suffice. It could include items as diverse as buy nails, and talk to boss about staff changes, and draft ideas about off-site meeting. If, however, you have 50 or 100 next actions pending, keeping all of those on one big list would make it too difficult to see what you needed to see. Each time you got any window of time to do something, you'd have to do unproductive resorting. If you happen to be on a short break at a conference, during which you might be able to make some calls, you'd have to identify the items that were calls among a big batch of unrelated items. When you went out to do odds and ends, you'd probably want to pick out your errands and make another list. Another productivity factor that this kind of organization supports is leveraging your energy when you're in a certain mode. When you're in phone mode, it helps to make a lot of phone calls. Just crank down your calls list. When your computer is up and running and you're cruising along digitally, it's useful to get as much done online as you can without having to shift into another kind of activity. It takes more energy than most people realize to unhook out of one set of behaviors and get into another kind of rhythm and tool set. And obviously, when a key person is sitting in front of you in your office, you'd be wise to have all the things you need to talk about with him or her immediately at hand. The most common categories of action reminders. You'll probably find that at least a few of the following common list headings for the next actions will make sense for you. Calls, at computer, errands, office actions or at office, at home, agendas for people in meetings, read, review. Calls. This is the list of all the phone calls you need to make. You can work off it as long as you have a phone available. The more mobile you are, especially if you have a cell phone, the more useful you'll find it to have one single list of all your calls, those strange little windows of time that you wind up with when you're off-site or traveling, on a break or waiting for a plane maybe, offer a perfect opportunity to work down your list. Having a discrete calls list makes it much easier to focus and intuitively pick the best call to make in the moment. I suggest that you take the time to write the phone number itself alongside each item. There are many situations in which you would probably make the call if the number was already there in front of you, but not if you had to look it up. At computer. If you work with a computer, particularly if you move around with a laptop or have a PC at work and another one at home, it can be helpful to group all those actions that you need to do when it's on and running. This will allow you to see all your options for computer work to do, reminding you of all the emails you need to send, the documents you need to draft or edit, and so on. Because I fly a lot, I even maintain an online action list separate from my at computer one. When I'm on a plane, I can't easily connect to the web or to my server as many actions require. So instead of having to rethink what I can and can't do whenever I look at my at computer list, I can trust that none of my at computer actions require that I be connected, which frees my mind to make choices based on other criteria. If you have a computer only at work, you may not need a separate at computer list. Office actions may cover those actions because the office is the only place you can do them anyway. Similarly, if you have a computer only at home and it's not a laptop, you may be able to put computer-specific actions on your at-home list. Errands. It makes a lot of sense to group together in one place reminders of all the things you need to do when you're out and about. When you know you need to get in your car and go somewhere, it's great to be able to look at the list while you're on the road. Actions like get stock certificates from Safety Deposit Box, pick up pictures at the framers, and buy petunias at the nursery would all go here. This list could, of course, be nothing more elaborate than a post-it that you keep in your planner somewhere, or a screen in an errands category of the to-do section on your Palm organizer. It's often helpful to track sublists within individual errands items. For instance, as soon as you realize you need something from the hardware store, you might want to make hardware store the list item and then append a sublist of all the things you want to pick up there as you think of them. On the low-tech end, you could create a hardware store post-it. On the high-tech side, if you were using a digital list, you could attach a, quote, note, unquote, to hardware store on your list and input the details there. Because I travel in major metropolitan areas so much, I keep two errands lists, errands Ojai, where I live, and errands anywhere, for all those other things I can pick up even when I'm on the road. T connectors for irrigation would go on errands Ojai, but get dress socks would go on errands anywhere. Office actions at office. If you work in an office, there will be certain things that you can do only there, and a list of those will be a useful thing to have in front of you then, though obviously If you have a phone and a computer in your office, and you have calls and at computer as separate lists, they'll be in play as well. I'd use an office actions or at office list for anything that required an internet connection available only or even most conveniently in the office. For example, a reminder to download a large software program from the web would go on this list for me. At home. Many actions can be done only at home, and it makes sense to keep a list specific to that context. I'm sure you've got numerous personal and around-the-house projects, and often the next thing to do on them is just to do them. Hang new print, organize CDs, and switch closets to winter clothes would be typical items for this grouping. If you have an office at home, as I do, anything that can be done only there goes on the at-home list. If you work only at home and don't go to another office, you won't need an office actions list at all. The at-home list will suffice. Agendas. Invariably, you'll find that many of your next actions need to either occur in a real-time interaction with someone or be brought up in a committee, team, or staff meeting. You have to talk to your partner about an idea for next year. You want to check with your spouse about his schedule for the spring. You need to delegate a task to your secretary that's too complicated to explain in an email. And you must make an announcement at the Monday staff meeting about the change in expense report policies. These next actions should be put on separate agenda lists for each of those people and for that meeting, assuming that you attend it regularly. Professionals who keep a file folder to hold all the things they need to go over with their boss already use a version of this method. If you're conscientious about determining all your next actions, though, you may find that you'll need somewhere between 3 and 15 of these kinds of lists. I recommend that separate files or lists be kept for bosses, partners, assistants, spouses, and children. You should also keep the same kind of list for your attorney, financial advisor, accountant, and/or computer consultant, as well as for anyone else with whom you might have more than one thing to go over the next time you talk on the phone. If you participate in standing meetings, staff meetings, project meetings, board meetings, committee meetings, whatever, they too deserve their own files, in which you can collect things that will need to be addressed on those occasions. Often you'll want to keep a running list of things to go over with someone you'll be interacting with only for a limited period of time. For instance, if you have a contractor doing a significant piece of work on your house or property, you can create a list for him for the duration of the project. As you're walking around the site after he's left for the day, you may notice several things you need to talk with them about, and you'll want that list to be easy to capture and to access as needed. Given the usefulness of this type of list, your system should allow you to add agendas ad hoc as needed, quickly and simply. For example, inserting a page for a person or a meeting within an agenda section in a loose-leaf notebook planner takes only seconds, as does adding a dedicated memo in a PDA's agenda category. Read review. You will no doubt have discovered in your in-basket a number of things for which your next action is to read. I hope you will have held to the 2-minute rule and dispatched a number of those quick skim items already, tossing, filing, or rooting them forward as appropriate. To read items that you know will demand more than 2 minutes of your time are usually best managed in a separate physical stack basket labeled read review. This is still a list by my definition, but one that's more efficiently dealt with by grouping the documents and magazines themselves in a tray and/or portable folder. For many people, the read review stack can get quite large. That's why it's critical that the pile be reserved only for those longer than 2-minute things that you actually want to read when you have time. That can be daunting enough in itself, but things get seriously out of control and psychologically numbing when the edges of this category are not clearly defined. A pristine delineation will at least make you conscious of the inventory, and if you're like most people, having some type of self-regulating mechanism will help you become more aware of what you want to keep and what you should just get rid of. It's practical to have that stack of reading material at hand and easy to grab on the run when you're on your way to a meeting that may be late starting, a seminar that may have a window of time when nothing is going on, or a dentist appointment that may keep you waiting to get your teeth cleaned. Those are all great opportunities to crank through that kind of reading. People who don't have their read-review material organized can waste a lot of time, since life is full of weird little windows when it could be processed. Organizing waiting for. Like reminders of the action you need to do, reminders of all the things you're waiting to get back from or get done by others have to be sorted and grouped. You won't necessarily be tracking discrete action steps here, but more often final deliverables or projects that others are responsible for, such as the tickets you've ordered from the theater, the scanner that's coming for the office, the okay on the proposal from your client, and so on. When the next action on something is up to someone else, you don't need an action reminder, just a trigger about what you're waiting for from whom. Your role is to review that list as often as you need to and assess whether you ought to be taking an action such as checking the status or lighting a fire under the project. You'll probably find it works best to keep this waiting for list close at hand in the same system as your own next action's reminder lists. The responsibility for the next step may bounce back and forth many times before a project is finished. For example, you may need to make a call to a vendor to request a proposal for a piece of work,